how many donors do you have at 50,000 plus? How many donors in the $25,000 to $50,000 range? What is the dollar amount and what is the number of donors? And we are seeing across the board that at a minimum, 20% of the donors are making up 80% of the donations.
We've been doing this for 8 years. The 80-20 principle applies. It absolutely applies.
Welcome to the Social Impact Solutions Podcast, where we help mission-driven leaders measure and market their social impact so they can raise more money and do more good. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Jean-Marc. Together, we bring you expert insights, practical strategies, and real-world stories to help you create more meaningful and measurable change. This podcast is designed for purpose-driven leaders. So let's dive in, explore what's possible, and take your mission to the next level. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Social Impact Solutions Podcast, where we help nonprofits measure and market their social impact so they can raise more money and do more good. I'm Jean-Marc Vanderpool, one of the co-founders of Social Impact Solutions, and today I'm thrilled to introduce Caitlin Wendell from apt.io. It's a game changer in nonprofit data, benchmarking, and financial reporting. Another thing, Caitlin has done it all. She's a former professional athlete. She's a former investment banker. She's been a nonprofit CFO, and now she's a tech entrepreneur serving the nonprofit industry. We're diving into how nonprofits can leverage actionable data to improve strategy, sustainability, and social impact. Whether you're looking to simplify your data or elevate your fundraising game, this episode has it all. Let's dive on in. Caitlin, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Doing fantastic, and you're absolutely welcome. I'm super excited to get to dive into all things nonprofit data, benchmarking, finance, and reporting, because that is your wheelhouse with Apt. And so we're going to sort of cast the whole story behind what is Apt, why did you start it? Let's just go ahead and start off right there. Like, what is apt.io?
Yeah, so we are trying to make data more accessible, easy, and dare I say fun, for social impact organizations, nonprofits, independent schools, to really understand where they stand with data. We are seeing more and more data on there's, you know, a finite number of donors in the universe. And, you know, the donors that we're targeting are changing and how we need to engage with our impact, engage with our donors, engage with our stakeholders, like our board is evolving and changing. And we need to keep up with the times. So we're really focused on delivering actionable data and insights in an automated manner for nonprofits. And that includes your financial data, your donor data, your social impact data. We've even gone so far as automating reports for marketing your Google Analytics data. How are you growing holistically and looking at your picture of an organization holistically and strategically on a monthly basis? We're really focused on delivering automated reports at least monthly. Some people get them weekly, but we think monthly is a great target. We always say if you're looking at your data once a year after your fiscal year end, it's pointless. You might as well not do it. We want to do it on a monthly basis at a minimum so that we're looking at strategy. We can course correct throughout the year. And then we have a beautiful automated visual dashboard that we can just plug and play for our board reports. I was in the nonprofit space. I started in development with the Aspen Santa Fe Ballet and then moved into a CFO role with an art school and just continued to see the pain points of board reporting, communicating to our stakeholders, and just how can we make this easier? This shouldn't be so hard. And so that's really where Apt was born.
So great. And I think it's also worth mentioning, you spent quite a bit of time in investment banking before you got into that space. Is that true?
Correct. I was an investment banker with JP Morgan on Wall Street for 6 years, lived through the financial crisis somehow in New York City. And, you know, fast forward 6 years of 100-hour work weeks, I decided to do a 180. I actually thought I was going to ski bum before going to business school. I always knew I wanted to start a company, but I always wanted to also make a difference and have the work be meaningful. I randomly happened to land a job with Aspen Santa Fe Ballet Going full circle, I was a professional ballerina before going into investment banking. And on day one of opening up Razor's Edge, you know, I was in development looking at their data. I downloaded everything out of the system. I opened up Razor's Edge. I was like, is this really what we're using to drive strategy decisions? Like, okay, it's the CRM, but this was before even NXT. Like, there was zero reporting, zero visuals. And so kind of applying that investment banking skill set, pulling all the data out, creating really simple at the time line graphs. It was literally just tracking our cumulative donations year to date over prior years in Excel, a very rudimentary. But I showed it to our executive director and the board, and they're like, this is amazing. And, you know, we would print it quarterly on legal paper, tape it to the office walls. But in doing so, we raised the most money we ever had in the organization's 20-year history in under 6 months, just by having that increased visibility on where do we stand against prior years, against our goal, where are we lapsed, who are we targeting for major donors, and really starting to drive that strategy discussion. And that's really when the light bulb moment kind of went off in my head of actually visualizing data matters and communicating it in an easy to understand way for our board, for our stakeholders to understand, and for our teams to understand actually really does matter. And so that's really kind of what started getting the wheels turning on what we could do from a data delivery standpoint.
I'm just sad you weren't able to skip up during all this too. You didn't get to live that out as much. that's awesome. So the reason why I bring up the IB side, the investment banking side, is so people can understand the intellectual rigor that's applied to this. Like, this is not a conversation around simplistic thinking. Like, this is true, heavy-hitting, rigorous financial analysis when it comes to nonprofit data. And you might think, oh, well, our nonprofit isn't that complicated. Nonprofits are inherently complex, right? Like, just out of the box, they're complicated. And so it's just really important to understand what kinds of data we're talking about, what kind of data that's out there, because we're talking about financial data. All right. And I want to say something else. This wasn't that long ago, right? That you were doing this, you know, before NXT and all that.
Correct.
It just wasn't that long ago.
No.
So it's important to remind everyone that there's still a lot of room for growth in the industry when it comes to reporting. You actually know what's going on under the hood of your organization. Otherwise, we're flying blind, right? Truly flying blind.
Agreed.
You've told me some funny stories. Well, I shouldn't say funny. You've told me some interesting stories in the past of mountains of printed spreadsheets. I want to say that one more time. Printed spreadsheets, not online. That, and then just drawers and drawers and drawers of receipts. You know, these are reputable, great firms. So I'm not saying anything about the nonprofit. It's just the practice around data and just how it didn't evolve with the times. But I'd love for you to shine as much or as little light in that as you'd like to.
Yeah, you know, I joined an organization where I was brought in to clean up some of the financial history, and they had their bank reconciliations on legal paper, you know, from 10 years stacked on the desk. And at that point, I was just like, well, I don't know what we're going to do with this. I just took it and, you know, tossed it. But really, from day one, a check comes in, we want to code it a certain way, and the development team, we're literally writing sticky notes on the check, you know, and then handing it off to finance on how to code it, the sticky notes, the reconciliations, the system's not talking to each other, we're in Razor's Edge, they're in QuickBooks, then we have to reconcile. All of those things kind of were just driving me crazy. And, you know, how can we bring some very simple things to get rid of the manual processes? And we're just starting to crack that. I think it's still, we're seeing a lot of manual processes because of, you know, so many different tools. There's a tool for this. There's a tool for your online donations. There's a tool for your, you know, CRM, and then the marketing, and then your finance. And like you said, nonprofits are inherently complex. And that's what's adding to me a layer of complexity in the data. We have siloed data across all these sources. And in, you know, your donor CRM, we often aren't seeing what your annual fund goals or your total fundraising targets are. That's living in your financial software. And so we're pulling those things together so that we're actually seeing what are our, you know, what is our performance against our goal? How is that tracking? How can we pull all of these things in? And yes, we're applying a lot of rigor. The rigor is, we like to say, the complexity and the rigor is hidden on the back end, because our whole goal is for it to be simple and accessible for the user. So we're doing all of that. We're bringing in that investment banking skill set, applying that rigor. We're standardizing and normalizing data. We have most of our clients, you know, start off like, I don't think we can use Apt because our data isn't clean and we need to do a big cleanup project first. And our response to that is, our whole goal is that you don't have to do that data cleanup project. Mm-hmm. We need to understand what the discrepancies are, and then we can build in the logic on our side to handle that, to adjust for that, to clean it, and then push it to you. Because our whole goal is to take the burden away from organizations. I mean, every organization, no matter the size, I feel like the teams are stretched thin. There's so much on your plate. And like you said, it is complex. It is complex work. Donor engagement is complex work. Programmatic engagement is really hard to measure. And trying to figure out how to measure that without having a full-time team of data scientists and analysts and that skill set on your team, which is typically not seen and invested in unless you're, you know, a $1 billion nonprofit. It's not reasonable to expect to have that level of skill set on your team. So how can we deliver that in a way that we can start to figure out what are the KPIs? How do we keep it simple enough that we can understand it and accessible for the board? And so it's like, how can we take really complex data and make the simple just so simple and easy to understand? And we like to say simple is hard. And I don't think I'm not the one that came up with that. Probably Steve Jobs did, but you know.
I think it's so good though. I think it's so important for everyone to know, like, what she said is worth every single penny, right? Because you're thinking, oh, well, we need to do a cleanup first. I've seen organizations spend 18 months just on donor data cleanups. I've seen organizations spend 3 years on programmatic data cleanup. Hey, John Mark, we can't work with you yet because we've got to get our programmatic data clean. Like, trust me, we're not going to have the conversation. It's going to take you 3 years of someone working their tail off, right, to get that done, which is an enormous cost. And then looking at it on top of that is, you know, I'd rather work with someone that's done this 1,000 times that week rather than someone who has to figure it out. Like, I would opt in any situation. You know, if I'm building a house, getting my car fixed, or whatever, you know, doing taxes, I don't want to be someone's first at bat when it comes to doing taxes. I'd rather work with a pro that's been there, done that, you know, has not been audited, has not been, you know, any of that, has gone down that path and knows how to do things the right way. I think you mentioned several things that are really important, because when we think about these silos, you can also call them funnels. You can call them whatever you want to, but let's just use the silo analogy. When we've got operations, and I'm going to throw programs in there, I'm going to throw finance in there. Well, let's split those. Finance is its own silo. Programs is its own silo. You're looking at marketing. You're looking at development. You're looking at IT. There's so many other silos that when organizations, as they professionalize, they become more siloed and complicated. But the goal is to break down the walls of the silos and get people talking as often as we possibly can. And what you're really communicating and what the value prop of Apt is I'm going to give you these weekly or monthly reports that serve as the communication method. Like, that, this is the stuff that people need to be updated on. These are your KPIs that marketing needs to know, that ops is working on. You know, that's really the value prop. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, it's funny because our whole goal is to remove the silos. Let's look at this holistically, strategically. And for me, how are we driving operational sustainability? Mm-hmm. We cannot do that in a siloed atmosphere. And I think by the nature of the software where the data is being stored, the job functions, it's extremely easy to get siloed. And just like you said, as an organization grows and becomes more successful, we actually see the silos increase. And it's funny because I like to say everything should relate to a strategic plan. And we have a slide that shows that there should not be silos. Everything is a symbiotic relationship. Finance supports fundraising, supports marketing, supports programmatic engagement. These things all have to work together. And so it's super important to have something that facilitates that conversation. And the teams that we work with, I know the engagement's high when they're constantly asking questions or for changes, or can we dive more into this metric? And then the feedback we get is, you know, before we were always struggling to just put something together, and then we never had the time to digest the data, figure it out, talk about it, and put some strategy behind it. Should we be course correcting, changing how we're looking at things? And instead, now that it's being delivered automatically in their inbox, they just have to open up an email and it's right there. It's now, you know, in advance, getting delivered in advance of team meetings and board meetings, and they can sit down, review everything. And we're being told, like, the whole team is sitting down and reviewing it. Then the sub teams are sitting down and reviewing it and actually discussing it and taking action. And so relating back to a strategic plan, every organization has a formal strategic plan, and I'm not pushing for that because, you know, that can be a lot to put in place. But, you know, you can sit down with your team, put together 1 to 3, 5 to 10 year goals per functional area. To me, that's a strategic plan. Or do we want to go in, as an organization as a whole, as an overarching, you know, 5, 1, 5, and 10 year plan? And then below that, what are the goals within each, you know, functional area that we could apply something measurable? We like to call it a KPI, a key performance indicator, that can support the bigger goal. And that's where we start to see the silos start to mold into more of how are we working together. And it's like nice wheel of support. And that's really when we start seeing an organization start moving the needle towards more impact and more sustainability. And for us, that is the number one goal of why we're doing this, is to enable everyone to be so confident in their data and their performance. They know exactly what their playbook is to get to more sustainability and more impact. And when you have that, you actually do a better job raising money. Your board has more confidence in you. They're going to help you raise more money. And therefore, you're going to have more impact on the programmatic side. And so that's when you start to see the silos come together and mesh into, I don't know what we want to call it, into a symbiotic relationship. And, you know, what I hate hearing is when the CFO is telling fundraising, here's your annual fund goal for this year, and you're going to increase it by $500,000. Well, what if I know I'm not going to get that $100,000 renewal this year? How can I then increase my annual fund by $500,000? I don't have a strategic plan in place to bridge that gap from a fundraising perspective. And if I don't have those major gifts already identified and know for a fact we can raise another $500,000, then I'm not meeting my annual fund goal. Then we're not meeting our budget goals for an organization, and then we're not sustainable, right? So we have to understand our performance, and then B, apply the strategy to work together to remove those silos so that we can elevate the entire organization.
There's so much benefit to what you were just saying. When you think about, you know, you were just really describing sustainability as like forward progress, you know, like really just like knowing where we are, knowing where we're going, and making progress towards those goals. I think that's it's a different way to talk about sustainability. It's a much more practical way to talk about sustainability. I appreciate that a lot. But just thinking, okay, rather than, you know, the goals coming down from on high, what if we just circled the wagons for a minute, looked at the data, look at what we have, know who our ideal funders are, know how we're going to go get more of them, because that costs money, right? All of those things are very costly. Go marketing, donor acquisition costs, retention, all of that has a cost associated with it. And instead of just having these great dictates that come down, like this is where we're going, saying, No, like this is what I think we can build together. And this is how I think we can work together. And these are the insights that can come from a CRM that can come directly from there. And how does that relate to what we're doing from a marketing perspective right now? And that's what we love seeing. Like when we're doing like growth strategy, I want to know, you know, what's the return on marketing? You know, what is the current marketing strategy? And is that leading towards ideal donors? Or is it just, it feels right because the person that's in marketing is really comfortable on LinkedIn or on whatever. It's just, it really matters how we align skill sets. Otherwise, we're all just rowing in different directions. But that's just a little rant for me.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm thinking with you and your focus on, you know, the social impact measurement, marketing, the communication, the strategy behind it, that also all leads into the sustainability. And I, you know, if we have enough data, I'd love to, you know, work together one day to, you know, build that correlation of cohesive marketing communications, understanding your impact, how that all relates to the bottom line, and that correlation between sustainability, the really strong cohesiveness in communications and marketing. And I think that all relates down, you know, breaks down to that, we're going to call it a strategic plan, but just knowing what the organization wants to do this year, in 5 years, and in 10 years, and having everyone laser focused on those things, and being so clear and succinct is going to make such a difference. And then the board's going to be less confused. And then, you know, and they're your biggest advocates and they're communicating with people. And so all of that's this like trickle down effect. And when people are less confused, they can then take action in a better way, in a more strategic way, versus if they don't have any data, I guarantee you, your board is going to come up with 20 things for you to look at that might be of no use whatsoever because they're not related to your 1, 5, or 10 year goals. But, you know, I would love to one day run that huge correlation analysis between marketing, social impact engagement, your wheelhouse with like the actual measurable sustainability of the organization, because I can guarantee you it's correlated.
It is. I'm completely with you on that, Caitlin. I think that's such a really good point. And when you think, you know, it's unfortunate. I don't know if this is the same for you. Like our phone rings, proverbial phone rings, after a board comes back and says, we don't have enough impact data, or after a development director says, we don't have enough impact data, or we're missing this. And we don't know how to get it out of Salesforce or get it out of whatever platform. Is that similar for you? Like people are like, oh my gosh, we don't have the insights. We have no idea how much we're spending on X. We have no idea. What's that situation like for you?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's being used in a number of ways. Our proverbial phone rings when we've actually seen where we did not meet our goals this year. We now have a mandate to understand why. And we have a mandate from the board to understand why, to figure it out and to build in that visibility. But we also get it on the other side of the board is asking me for X, Y, and Z. Every time we have a board meeting, I get this analysis list. I don't have the bandwidth for it. And I know I was the CFO of an art school. Like I was not running these reports because I had 100 other things to do on any given second that were more pressing than actually running this analysis. And I wish that I always wanted to have time, but I just didn't have time to do it. There's just no way. And so ironically, I left that so I could do this full time. But it's like, how can I manage the board? And, you know, we were just meeting with the team last week. And he said, we're using your reports to say to the board, we are standardizing this. This is what other organizations are looking at. This is the best in class standard. This is what we need. This is what we need to look at. And the board's, you know, coming up with some weird analysis that, you know, they know is not in alignment with what they need to do. And it's going to take someone 3 weeks to do. And the question is then on the team's end, to what end? You know, to what end are we doing this analysis? She's like, we could analyze all this data, but again, to what end? And so like, let's keep it simple. Let's keep it focused. Let's keep it meaningful. And so sometimes what we're doing is creating of like, this is what you get. This is what we're focusing on for this year. If we need to run an analysis or adjust our key performance indicators or KPIs, we need to know why. What is the strategy behind it? What is that supporting within the goals of the organization versus like, let's just run an analysis. So it's a little bit of like mandated for the board's visibility and transparency, but it's also on the team side, taking such a burden off of them of, let's just standardize this, let's deliver it, and let's keep the conversation focused.
That's such a great point. It's such a great point. I'm assuming you're very familiar with John Doerr's Measure What Matters.
Who?
John Doerr, have you read his book, Measure What Matters?
No, but clearly I need to.
No, you don't need to. You know this
adding
stuff.
It to the list.
You know, trust me, this is the world you live in. Because it's important to talk about KPIs. I'm not a big fan of buzzwords, and that's coming from a guy that's a co-founder of Social Impact Solutions. A lot of buzzwords in there. And so just let's talk about the key performance indicator and the reason why it matters. Not just, hey, we need KPIs. Let's talk about like why does it matter and what it does for team alignment. Because I think it's important to distill things down further and further and further. Because the goal is like, how do we get all of our team members rowing this boat in the same direction, right? When they have disparate responsibilities. Just talking about, hey, KPIs, individual KPIs, departmental KPIs, organizational KPIs. All it says is we're rowing in this direction. But like what? Let's just pick a department. You, Caitlin, you pick a department and let's talk about five potential KPIs that that department could have. We can go back and forth however you deem appropriate.
Yeah. Let's start with fundraising. We have our most important metric. We could do five KPIs. I like to keep, you know, if we're focusing 1 to 3, but we have our most important fundraising metric. If you're only tracking one thing, this is the one thing that you need to be tracking. And I'm going to kind of lay it out on the math behind it. And we call it your PACE data.
Okay. I like it.
Where are you with your pace? And like I said earlier, you know, oftentimes we're seeing, okay, last year I raised, let's call it $2 million. And this year I am now going to have to raise $2.5 million. So every year, typically we see an annual fund, you have to raise more money. And so we're halfway through the year. And last year I had raised, you know, $1 million out of the 2 million. I was 50% of my way to goal 6 months into the year. Well, this year I need to track not how many dollars have I raised, but where am I as a percent to my goal? Am I ahead of that 50% or behind it? Because if I'm, you know, maybe I've raised more from a dollar perspective, but I'm actually behind on the percent to goal. So we call that your pace metric. What we do is, I mean, we typically see, and this isn't a metric, but this is like one of our most important things. I mean, we could call it the budget curve metric. The most important thing we do, and it's across anything that has a yearly target. So anything from finance, we typically see it in the finance and the fundraising side, not so much in marketing and the programmatic side, but typically we're seeing budgets that are like, here's our year-end budget is $2 million, but, you know, we have a huge uplift in the first 3 months of the year, and that's not budgeted for. And so then you'll think, oh, I'm way ahead of budget because I've just divided my $2 million by 12. We need to adjust that curve to match what our flows are for, you know, fundraising, for finance. And we do that for teams, and we can really track that pace exactly to the dollar. Are we ahead of pace or behind pace at any given time in the year? That is just like, if you're doing one thing, that is the single most important thing we want you to look at from a fundraising pace perspective is where you are year to date against prior years.
I think that's a really important one that rarely gets attention, right? And doesn't surprise me at all that you do this, but I love that it's a more innovative and long-term thinking approach to this. Because there are a lot of development directors, a lot of finance officers, that August, September rolls around, let's say July, August, and they're freaking out. because we're like, hey, this month we raised a fraction of what we raised in May, right? A fraction of what we raised in June. When you look at the pace of the year, it's like, actually, you're 30% ahead, you know, of fundraising from last year. It's like, what do you mean? Well, we know you're going to raise likely this much in, you know, Q4, first 3 weeks of Q1, but we'll just talk about Q4. Like, you're way ahead of goal here. And you've built up monthly recurring revenue by an extra $7,000 a month. Trust me, the rest of the year's looking really good. I mean, those conversations are going on right now. I've had those conversations the last week and a half. I'm like, yeah, you're killing it right now. It's like, what are you talking about? We got killed in August. It's like, no, like, you are so far ahead of schedule simply because of the work that's been done over the last 9 months. But I think that's fantastic that you're tracking this.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the most important thing for visibility, knowing where you're going to end the year. And every single organization that we've implemented it on in the past year reached their goals. And that is crazy, and knock on wood, that'll continue to happen as we continue to grow. That has been the most exciting thing for us possible. And some other go ahead.
I want to just tell a quick story with it, because it's great that it's called pace, and it's also awesome that you're a professional athlete. But thinking about, you know, I had my brother-in-law, he just did a 50K where they ran a 5K every 2.5 hours for like 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a wild man. Anyway, his second 5K was a PR for all time, right? It was truly like, he's a great runner, but he PR'd a 5K on his second out of 10 in that race. And it's because he was running with, you know, just an absolute mutant of a runner. Like, this guy was just, he was just pacing himself off of this other guy. And so he PR'd on his second of 10, which is, again, pretty wild. But you get to sort of do that same thing for your organization. You're like, all right, if we're going to bump up our goals, this is the new pace. Hey guys, we just set a new pace here. It might be, you know, going back to the running analogy, 30 seconds per mile faster than what we ran last year. But this is the new pace. And so some people might hear that and like, oh, I'm already drowning. I'm already, you know, blown over with tasks and responsibilities. That's where the rest of these KPIs can really help, because it allows us to do less, right? To sort of throw the responsibilities that are not helping us reach our goals aside so we can focus more. But anyway, I just want to throw that little story in there.
And that, well, that actually tees us up to like, well, how do we accelerate our pace? Right. How do we do that? And one of the most key things that we're looking at is giving levels. How many donors do you have at 50,000 and a plus? How many donors in the $25,000 to $50,000 range? What is the dollar amount and what is the number of donors? And we are seeing across the board that at a minimum, 20% of the donors are making up 80% of the donations.
Every time.
Every time.
Every single time I've done this analysis, we've been doing this for 8 years, without question. I'm going to do it again this afternoon. We're going to run the analysis on there. The 80-20 principle applies. It absolutely applies, but I don't want to interrupt you. Keep going.
I mean, it's wild. I mean, we haven't seen it go below that. We've seen it go up to, 90%, 10% of donors are making up 90%.
Right.
We prefer to keep it. We like to see it around 80-20. That's about as healthy of a donor mix we're going to get. And that's just the reality. But again, bridging in like the finance, the symbiotic relationship between finance and fundraising. When I joined an art school, we had just slower, our fiscal year started in January, and we just typically had slower cash flows in January. And like most of the dollars being raised was happening from September to December. Our annual gala was held in August. And I'm like, there is no way I can run an organization financially, have any kind of visibility on meeting our budget when, you know, 90% of our cash inflows are coming from August to December, and our fiscal year end is December. Like, this is just not going to work for me. Also, we had slower cash flows. So, like, you know, the bank account is a little bit thinner. Just seeing all of that in January, you know, managing cash flow. And I'm like, why are why are board renewals going out in September? Like after the gala, when people, you know, the board's already contributed a lot of money. I mean, we're talking $10,000, $20,000 tables and tickets and, you know, plus the pledges, plus the art auctions, right? They're much less likely psychologically to give again for their board gift or increase their board gift after that event, right? Because they've already given a ton of money. And psychologically, it's like, well, we just supported the organization. And so I was like, all early donor renewals need to go out like literally January 1st. Like, so let's move up anything over $5,000. Let's move that renewal to January 1st. Like, it completely changed how the organization ran. We went from, I was brought in after their biggest operating deficit. We had the biggest operating surplus ever that year within 6 months. We were able to, you know, fund, you know, match 401ks at a much higher percentage. We were able to take dollars, reinvest it into deferred maintenance and capital expenditures. We were able to put dollars into the endowment instead of drawing from the endowment because we had such good visibility from having those early cash flow timings. And so how do we accelerate pace? It's, let's look at the easy things that are going to move the needle. And it's 20% of donors. Like, let's look at them. Can we get, do we have periods of time where we're scrambling to the finish line? Like, can we move that forward 2 months? If you're having your annual fundraiser event 4 to 6 weeks before your fiscal year end, I would say you either need to change your fiscal year end or you need to change when you're holding that event. Because if it's a big portion of your budget and it's going into, I mean, those fundraisers, they fund programmatic impact. They fund everything, right? And if you don't meet your goals for whatever reason, you don't have any time between that event and the end of the year to course correct or figure out maybe we can get a different grant or we can do this. And so again, events, marketing, it all comes together into like, how can we, like you're, you know, with a race, how can we accelerate that pace? How can we really see what we need to bring things forward?
Sometimes
maybe a little off track, but it's one of our,
I'm not trying to catch up. It's just so important, right? It's just, you can flip that metric on its head. That means 4/5 of your donors only can, I mean, like, it flips very poorly. 4/5 of your donors only give 20% of total revenue.
Yeah.
1/5 of donors give 80% of total revenue. So what do we want to do? Double down on the 80, right? Go get more of, you know, the 80%, like that, really the huge revenue makers. Find the 20% of donors that are giving 80% of the revenue and go get more of them.
Yep.
It also gives you permission to stop doing things. It gives you permission to say, hey, and I'm just picking on social media because it's always fun to pick on social media. All of these really time-consuming, expensive social media pieces where we might be raising $1 to $15 a month from individuals, if it's not your ideal donor, you can stop doing them, right?
Yes.
You can just say, done. Throw it out the window. We're not picking that up again. Or, right. You know, if you're a grant writing organization and you smoke grants and you're trying, oh, we need to do more events, but we only raise, you know, a little bit of money from events. Stop doing events. Write more grants, you know? Like, or if you're an events-based organization and you're trying to get into grant writing, just keep doing the thing that you're really good at and do it better and do more of it again and again. Then you just created all this time for your organization. You just created time. Because if you were spending 80 hours a week doing social media, you now have 80 hours a week back. And that's where you can really, you know, kick burnout right in the tail and be like, we're not doing those things anymore. We're doing more of this thing. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's hitting the nail on the head of everything we think about. It's just, it's exactly right. You know, it's lean in to what you're good at and what's working and get rid of the noise, because the noise is probably diluting your performance more than you are aware of. And if it's not moving the needle, if it's not pushing things forward for your organization, just don't do it. Stop trying to be something to everyone. Stop trying to check off the social media box if that's not driving engagement. For some organizations, it's going to drive a ton of engagement. And like you said, and where your wheelhouse is like, let's identify our ideal donor, figure out what marketing channels are reaching that, are having that impact. Also within that, in figuring that out, let's figure out what is not having that impact and let's just not do it. And let's not do it just because other organizations are doing it. Like, let's lean into who we are and what makes us unique as an organization, because I guarantee you who you are as an organization, and every organization is different. They have different personalities. They're inherently different because they're made up of different people and their team and their mission and their location. Lean into that, because I guarantee you that's what's making you successful at what you're already doing, and get rid of the noise.
I just couldn't agree with you more. I think one of the most effective lies that has ever been told is that small and medium-sized nonprofits need to be omnichannel. It's just sort of like, wow, I don't know who pulled that one off, but that is just not true. That is so expensive, so time-consuming. And if your ideal donor isn't on that channel, guess what? You don't have to be there. You might, but somebody might find us. Yeah, of course they will. There's a channel. There might be people there, but your ideal donor is who you want more of. Right? You want to go get more of them. We use the phrase diversification through duplication, right? We're trying to duplicate our ideal donor so we can scale, not just be diversified fundraising channels. You know, that's not what you want until you start doing substantial sums of revenue, $25 million, $50 million. You start doing more and more and more. Of course you can be omnichannel. You're huge, right? You can pay for it.
Then like, why take dollars and resources, you know, that could be driven towards impact for right. things that are not impactful to the organization.
Right.
And I think KPIs can serve, like, literally, like you just said, in the permission to not do something. We're still monitor, you know, we're not going to do this, but we're still going to monitor website visitors each month. And if we really see that it's going down, we can look at that, right? But if we see that it's steady or increasing and at a healthy level, just because we've decided not to do something from a social media standpoint or whatever to drive website traffic, that's taking a lot of team time. And because we're measuring this, we now know whether it's having a positive, negative, or neutral impact.
Right. Okay. So you've covered two KPIs. Let's do number three. We talked about pace, which I love. Huge fan of pace. Talk about knowing your ideal donor profile.
Yep.
Reaching the choir on that one. What's number three?
I would say a really just great indicator of, and again, this all relates to your strategic plan. A great indicator is average donor giving. Super yes. easy. I love yes. an easy metric, right?
Yes.
It's just number of donors, dollar gifts. Is that going up or down? It's just a nice, healthy, like it's like a health check metric of if it's continuing to go down, we need to know why. And that means we're probably not doing our moves management or finding those higher donors in an effective way. And so it's
like a lot.
Easy spot check.
It is. I mean, it's a simple equation, right? It's a simple equation to look at. And then you can drill into like, okay, donor lifetime value by segment, right? We can start looking at, okay, what's the lifespan of a donor? How many years do they stay with us? You know, what's our trend rate? Like, there's so many things that we can really decipher from that. But just knowing customer acquisition or donor acquisition costs versus donor lifetime value. If yeah. you know that ratio, the sky's the limit with what you can do. Because you're like, okay, cool. Now we know what our average donor giving, what their lifetime value is. How much did it cost for us to acquire one of those? About 100 of them. Okay, so what do we need to go do to go get a bunch more of them, right? It's just like having the data.
We need to call John Mark.
But it's like what both of our companies do. It's just sort of like, this is how we get to the root problem here, right? This is how we get to, oh, well, you know, inflation's super high right now, so people aren't giving. Fun fact, people have never been wealthier too, right? We've never had more wealth in the United States and around the world. I mean, by multiple times. I mean, if you look at what's happened in private equity the last 25 years, we're not talking about inflation problems. We're talking about substantial wealth being generated. And it's just knowing where the money is, right? Where are the available donations? How do we message for them? How do we go and attract those people? What data do these funders need to feel good about giving you a ton of money? So I'm a little bit biased, but I feel like you and I are very like-minded when it comes to, you know, you were in investment banking. You know how much wealth is being generated, you know, by some of these companies. It's crazy. And so, like, I have a huge amount of sympathy for, like, oh, man, inflation's super high. Totally tracking. But other things are also true, right? Other things are true. And there's so much money out there for nonprofits to go raise. It's just not always in the easy to find places. You agree with that?
I completely agree. And I think, you know, the reality is your, you know, 20% of donors giving 80% are not going to be the ones impacted by inflation. And so, you know, the stock market continues to increase and outperform. So, which is great because from a financial side, you know, endowments have been strong. And that's, you know, always a great way to kind of help manage cash flows and maybe make up if you have a lot of donors that, you know, maybe you're seeing donors, you know, giving less, then maybe it's time to actually have an endowment campaign. Mm-hmm. So there's just things like where you're driving major gifts that then can help sustain the organization in the long term. So there's like, there's ways to spin the negative into the positive. Okay, cool. We need bigger major gifts, and maybe those bigger major gifts need to go to our endowment to help stabilize the organization in the long term.
It's so great. So we've talked about three huge KPIs there, three very important KPIs, put that a little bit differently. You're rolling out a KPI checklist for nonprofits, which I think is fantastic. Is that going to be available at apt.io, APTE.io?
Yes, you can just go on, download the guide. Our whole goal is just some simple KPIs across different functional areas to get you started thinking about what it could be and what your KPIs could be. We also, you know, are always happy to talk to you. You can book time directly on my calendar straight from our website. And we're always happy to say, all right, you know, what are some of your goals? And let's talk about what some of those KPIs can be that are simple to track and achievable and attainable for you. Because sometimes they just differ from organizations, but there are some blanket ones that we think every organization can do. And our whole goal is to keep it as simple as possible so we can start somewhere in empowering everyone to deliver their data.
That's so good. That's so good. And so apte.io, that's the link to go to. It's been fantastic. I can't believe that they can just schedule directly with you. That's fantastic. That's a huge gift on your part. Great opportunity for them.
Probably it's really won't important. Last forever, so.
Probably won't last forever. I can assure you that it won't last forever.
Just to be candid.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this a few months later, I apologize. That might not be an opportunity. But you work very closely with nonprofit organizations, independent schools. I mean, it's similar but different. It's the same kinds of insights. So important to be able to see this. But it just to go beyond the KPIs, like this is how you right the ship. This is how you grow the organization. So often it comes down to, and this is what I love about these conversations, is that there are these specific metrics that are sometimes not obvious, right? When you just think about what is the metric that substantially grew this nonprofit? You know, so many people think about Charity Water. That it was, oh, they were so innovative in their, you know, B2C approach, their business to consumer type approach. Did they raise a bunch of money doing that? Yes. What they really did was raised a ton of money from family foundations. They put this beautiful front end for normal people, you know, to become donors, but their back end was all about enabling growth. And they did that exclusively through family foundations. But when we don't know, like, what is the KPI that's going to move the organization forward and why aren't we focusing all of our time there? We don't really have a strategy, right? Like, that's the whole point. Like, we don't have that opportunity. And you just do a great job of providing those insights. So I'm super excited to get to promote you to everyone listening to this podcast.
It's been super fun. And, you know, the whole point is to help increase impact. And that's driven by sustainability and strategy.
Without question. Well, Caitlin, thanks so much for your time today. This was an absolute delight. Let's do this again in the future.
I love it. Thank you so much, John Mark.
All right, everybody. Take care. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.